You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman, as always, host of this wonderful podcast. And joining me on the other line from the West Side, Indianapolis News and Forbes.com, the man is going to tell us who the Pacers are going to draft. Mr. Tony East. Tony, who are the Pacers going to draft tonight?
Adam, I don't know. But you know what I'm excited for tomorrow? We get to talk about the player or players they drafted, and we don't have to guess anymore. There's no more guessing. I hate guessing. I like scouting. I hate guessing, and I hate people asking me about comps. So I'm excited to be done with all that. That said, tonight could be pretty crazy. Teams are done with their COVID finance year, and everybody's kind of settled and figured out what they need going forward. And this draft has some strange tiering. So could be a high volume of stuff that goes on. Pacers in a very interesting spot. They're like right out of where the really good guys are, but could still maybe get one. Depends. It's going to be wild. And yesterday, we previewed the draft going through the league and how things might shake out and how the Pacers can be impacted by everything that happens today. Pacers-centric draft talk all the way through to get you prepped for tonight's draft.
Yeah. And so we're going to do a whole bunch of just like different Pacer draft topics on today's show. And at the end of the show, we will give you our prediction of who they will take or if they'll make a move or some wild prediction. We'll probably be wrong, but we'll give you that. So you can wait, look forward to that at the end of the show. But to start, I think we're going to talk about draft philosophy. And Tony asked me before the show what I meant by that. And what I mean is that I think when it comes to the draft, there's a few kind of like hard rules you have to follow as an NBA team. I think the number one rule is you cannot take the player you think is going to help you today. You have the player who's going to be the best player in, let's call it, 3 or 4 seasons. Because if you get stuck, if you take the guys going to help you today, you could end up with a not so, or like, you know, reaching or getting somebody who is sort of like not the right fit, where like you shouldn't worry about fit. Just take the guy you think will be the best player, figure out later. Now there might be an exception to that rule, and it might be at the center spot. But besides that, I think really just take the best player and move, and it'll sort itself out in 3 years. Your team will be totally different most of the time.
Yeah, I generally, outside of extreme low floor scenarios, and there's one guy in particular that I think of with this draft, am in favor of the highest ceiling or like the longest ceiling, if that makes sense. Like there could be a guy that, like, if the 3-point shot comes around, he's amazing. But that might be just like a 1-year flash in the pan, whereas other guys, they have a more obvious skill to develop to be amazing. But yeah, philosophy wise, I generally more long-term thinking than short-term, especially for a 34 and 38 team. I mean, obviously cool. They're probably better than their record says, you know, they had a really weird season last year. Every team did really, but you know, you have to, even though, especially because I have so many thoughts that I can't think of a good transition, but you know, with their rotations kind of clogged next year already, like they don't really need an immediate contributor anyway. And, you know, fit, you certainly think about when you have a bunch of centers and, you know, your roster's mostly guards and centers. But I'm with you that you think of the guy who has the best probable outcomes for years 5 through 9, let's say, or 4 through 8 or something, and try to get that guy and how he'll fit on the team you have then. And teams plan that far out, but like the Pacers kind of know. In fact, they do know the only guy they'll have under contract then might just be Sabonis, maybe even nobody, right? So it's hard to project what you'll need fit-wise then. So don't worry about fit. Don't worry about that too much. Just pick the guy you think is going to be the best player at that time.
Yeah, I mean, take the roster 3 seasons ago. I mean, I don't have it up at the moment, but on top of my head, I mean, there's like, what, isn't pretty much Sabonis the only guy left from the 2017-18 team?
And Miles.
I'm sorry, Sabonis, Miles, only 2 left from that 2017-18 team. I think, right. If I look at the list, right?
I'll pull it up, but yeah, I think.
Yeah, so. No, it's EK, Bogdanovich, Trevor Booker, Darren Collison, Al Jefferson, Corey Joseph, TJ Leaf, Ben Moore, Trey McKinney Jones, right. Poitras, Clint Robinson, Lance Sumner. Oh, there's Sumner. 3.
Okay.
3 guys, Wilkins, Joe Young, and Thaddeus Young. So yeah, 3 of the, what's it, by 15 guys, 17 guys, depending on how many they have this
season. Since Pritchard took over, but 2017-18, right? 3 guys.
Yeah, so you don't know. You just don't know. In 4 years from now, you just don't know who'll be on the roster, who'll be your best player or whatnot. You have to just take the guy you think is going to project out the best. Now, right. Like I said, the exception to me for that is in this draft, other philosophy is don't take an F in center. I mean, just don't. I mean, well,
for various reasons. But one being, it's likely that they will keep one of their three bigs for a very long time. And two, getting backup centers in the modern NBA is so easy. Like, it's a joke. So if you assume you're going to have one of those centers, like, they could, if they wanted, have Goga for like 7 more years, like, easily, right? So yeah, no center, ignore that. But like even when they picked Aaron Holiday, right, they already had Darren Collison and Corey Joseph and stuff. And it's like, you can't worry about that one year where they're both expiring. Who cares? Like, pick the guy you think is going to be the best. Maybe they did think that was Aaron. He was good for his first two seasons compared to where he was selected. But yeah, philosophy wise, I think you have to think about that this year. And I think also, you know, I think ironically our boss, but he says this very well. You know, a lot of people talk about the league trending small, and that's somewhat true, but some of it is just the league is trending skilled, right? The reason the Warriors played small ball is because it was their 5 most skilled players. And a lot of teams do that now anyway. You know, centers are awesome because they have height and they can rebound and set better screens, and just their height allows them to make plays that other guys don't. But when you need your most skilled 5 guys in there for an extended stretch, sometimes that doesn't include your center. So as the league trends skilled, you kind of look for guys who have skills, right? And that seems dumb to say, but like, sometimes tools are only so much of the pick, right? You don't pick a guy for tools and try to develop skills. If they have skills, you pick it. Like Ryan Carr said, the Pacers vice president of I already forget his job title, of player development. He said, you need to have a skill that will get you on the court. And when he was talking about draft philosophy earlier this week. So I agree with him there. So I think skill as opposed to traits is more how I lean when it comes to picks as well.
Yeah. I think the other thing I would say is, and this is more for everybody else out there, don't expect your rookie to be any good.
Not at all. No chance.
I mean, like, I feel like maybe the last rookie to be like really good his first year. I mean, either like the number one pick a lot of times can be like good enough for like pretty good quality, but then like not at the top 10, like Donovan Mitchell is the only player I think was really good his first season. Right.
Yeah.
And that was like, outside the top 10 in the last, like, I can't, you know, a long time. Turner was pretty good his first season. Actually, he ended up starting 60 something games, which is pretty good for a rookie, but like, expect this guy, cause he's probably under the age of 20, to not have developed like the strength he's going to have in a couple years. And he's just not going to be that good. And that's like a, you know, you have to look at the player and think, what can he be, not what he is.
Remember, everybody panned Obi Toppin as the most NBA-ready guy last year, and he ends up playing 62 games, 11 minutes per game for the Knicks, 4.1 points, 2.2 rebounds per game. He didn't play very much, but he didn't play very much because he wasn't that good, because no one is NBA-ready at first. That's just, like, not really a thing to me. But on a related adjacent note to that, don't conflate, like, old players with – like low ceiling players. Like that's not true either. You know, it's kind of varying case to case, but there is very little case to case of NBA ready guys like Chris Paul, LeBron, like the studs. Yeah, they're a little more NBA ready because they're just better. But in general, rookies are not contributors year one.
Yeah, they just frankly aren't. I mean, like, there are rare cases, and I think the other thing about it is, like, a lot of times the best player of the first year, by year three, the draft have been totally different, right? So, like, I think a lot of times, like, Paul George, for example, this, right? After his first year, Paul George wouldn't have been drafted in the top 5. I'm pretty sure now that draft, he would have been number one. But you went about year 3 or 4 of that. A lot of in the draft, we have to kind of be like, the long game is ultimately how you win.
And no one thought DeAndre Hunter was very good after his rookie year with Atlanta. He popped in year 2. Colin Sexton was not the best rookie either. He's getting a lot better now. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is a good one where he was good as a rookie, but now he's like one of the best 3 picks from his draft class, right? Like, guys, just it's not a one-year thing. And no one is really NBA. I mean, Luka's like the best NBA-ready guy of the last 5 years probably. So that's, you know, an outlier, of course. But yeah, it's not a thing. Speaking of draft philosophies for the Pacers specifically, what would your biggest needs be? I mean, I know we said don't draft based on need, but in terms of in the future, what would your biggest needs be? Like, assuming a few guys like Sabonis, let's say Warren, McConnell, it sounds like per J. Michael's reporting will be re-signed this summer. What would your needs be looking at who could be around for the Pacers in like 4 or 5 years?
I mean, it's anything but a center. That's because you have a center who you think
ABC
in 4 years, just in a roster, you would hope, right? Anything.
Yeah.
But everything else, I mean, the needs thing is more, can they find a guy like they don't need to be hitting on, like, they need to be taking a guy who they can hit on big time, if that makes sense, right? Like, I'd rather them, and it's probably weird, take a chance on a guy who ends up being bad but has a really high ceiling versus the other way around where, like, they get a guy who's a rotation player. Now, that's probably what happened ultimately, but, like, this is a market where when you're this high in the draft, it's kind of rare for this team. you have to sort of hit on that pick, and the only way you're going to really get a top 20 player is through the draft or some kind of like Sabonis like trade where you get a guy maybe a little undervalued and kind of takes off.
They pick the high ceiling guys like Leaf and Goga, and everyone's like, oh, they suck at drafting when they flame out. You know, you got to balance that in retrospect.
Well, so were they high ceiling? I guess they were sort of.
Yeah, that was kind of the thought of
I mean,
athletic stretch four, right?
Yeah, I think the problem with those, well, at least with the Leaf pick, is that, like, I think OG, like, I think it was pretty clear had a higher ceiling, but somehow they didn't take him, right? I mean, that was the issue with some of those is like.
Well, yeah, I mean, I thought it was a bad pick at the time, too, but he is a higher ceiling pick. Same with Goga.
Yeah, well, no, but the thing is, too, all three of those guys, though, are out of the top 15, and there's just not a lot of guys in
either draft, a little different.
who are good, where, like, this pick is there has an okay chance of being a good player, and you could get some, like, we've seen 13 picks.
Right.
Turn into, all NBA players. No, it's more of a rare thing for that exact slot. But all I mean is that this is a spot where you probably won't pick this high again in the next, let's call it 3 or 4 seasons, maybe.
Ideally.
Ideally. I mean, you might pick this like 16 or 17, but you won't pick this high. It's considered a deep-ish draft. And there are a lot of guys that have like higher ceilings. So I think you're better off just taking like a very high ceiling guy, even if he flames out. Even though, you will get grief for it. But if you do hit, if Peter hits this draft pick or maybe next draft or whatever it is, nobody remembers the other 4 draft picks, right? Larry Bird could miss a lot of draft picks, but he hit Paul George, and that's what really mattered, right?
Yeah, Danny too, right?
Danny Granger.
Yeah.
I say hit Danny Granger. Was Donnie Walsh the GM when they took Reggie back in the day? I think he was.
I believe so.
Right? Wasn't he even the GM? They remember the guy you hit on, and then you have to just build around that player, but you got to hit on that player first.
Yeah, right. Yeah, when we talked about skills as the thing earlier, right, we got asked by the Locked On Network, what would your teams need to be? And like, if you really thought, what do the Pacers need right now? One of our things on there is strong defensive forwards, and they need that now. But also, if there are skilled guys in the future, that will always be a valuable skill. And the other two we selected were secondary playmakers, right? Because again, very rarely is that invaluable on your team unless you have too many. And shooting, right? Three skill. So to me, those are skills that, even if they're an immediate ready guy and you pick them because of that, in 4 or 5 years, if your team construction changes, that is still extremely valuable to your team.
Yeah, I would agree. Are you ready to talk about some actual player names?
Sure, sure.
All right, so let's do this. Let's take one quick break, and then we'll do some actual player names that have been kind of floated around, linked to the team, whatnot. There's been a lot of them. But first, today's Locked On Pacers podcast is brought to you by Rock Auto. The ever-increasing numbers of makes and models is now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. Why endure often post-receiving intimidating questions and wait while the person on the counter orders the parts on their computer using the only brand their warehouse happens to carry? You have a computer, you have a phone, and you can access rockauto.com right from your home or in your pocket. You can save time and money using Rock Auto. Why should you spend 300% or even 100% more for the same parts from a chain store or a car dealership? Rock Auto is a family business serving dealers for over 20 years. Prices are always reliable low for every customer. They have everything you need. Go explore the website today and find the solution to your auto parts need. And go to rockauto.com right now. See all the parts available for your car or truck. And write Locked On, LOCKEDON, in the How to Hear Best box so they know that we sent you. Main selection, reliable low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Rockauto.com. So for me, there are two names. I think they've been specifically to the Pacers. Now you might have some more names, Tony, but the two that at least I would start with is the Chris Duarte and Corey Kispert, right? Those are probably those two players are the Pacers in the most mock drafts or J. Michael reporting.
Yeah, Jay's reporting, I think, is where we should probably start and end this, really. He's the guy most connected to the Pacers specifically. But even Chad Ford, who does a pod for Locked On, also linked them to Kispert earlier this offseason as well. Jay linked him to Duarte forever ago. But Jay's piece today was literally 5 players who could be the best fit for Pacers. But he also, it's sourced on guys they like. And it's Chris Duarte, Corey Kispert, Davion Mitchell from Baylor, Cam Thomas from LSU, and Trey Murphy from Virginia. And interesting. Let me be careful with words here. An interesting choice of 5 players with the 13th pick. We'll talk about our favorites later, but in terms of the actual reporting, those are the 5 names we've seen. However, I would like to help Jay here and clarify for all of you who don't read articles and just read headlines that in the article it says, could all this change or could it be a smokescreen? Both are absolutely possible. So While Jay has the sources are always trying to angle and get info at this time. So just keep that in mind. But those are the 5 names that we have heard for now.
Yeah. And You want to just go through those five names, or you want to go? I mean, like I know you have some opinions on Duarte, so I don't want to like.
I don't have that strong. So Duarte, you know, my big board is not Pacers centric. On a Pacers centric big board, he would be a little higher than this, but I have him ranked 23rd. I watched him ironically last night because there was another Jay article from yesterday that linked to him. So I wanted to get another feel for him. He's a good shooter, right? He made 42.5% of 5.5 threes a game. He's a pretty good defender at 6'6", right? So those are skills that are useful in the NBA. That said, he is, this has been a thing in the analysis of him that surprised me. People keep talking about he's good at beating guys off the dribble. I do not think he's good at that at all. He's really a good movement guy off ball, which could be a good fit with how Carlisle's offense is played in Dallas. But to me, like, if you're just an off-ball shooter and good defender, like, that's a good player. But the big downside for him is he's 24. Right now, he's 24, right? He's older than Brandon Ingram right now. And I know we've talked about this before, but that is crazy old. But he's really popular in this draft, right? Like, I can say so much from my couch at home. I don't work for an NBA team. But, like, if all these teams want him, there's clearly something to that. And they're all smarter than me. So bake that into your analysis that, you know, the Wizards apparently want him. The Lakers are apparently trying to move up to get him, right? The Warriors might pick him at 14. So the thing with Duarte is, you know, there's a lot of reasons you might not want to pick him, right? He's not that great scoring off the dribble. But, you know, he's decent defense and good shooting could be enough to be a solid NBA player, even if he already is really old.
Right. He's wowed in the workouts is what I think a lot of the reporting has done.
Yeah. He was great in the interviews with us in the media, which I know means very little to you listening, but to me, I mean, that shows something.
Yeah. I mean, he's 24.
It doesn't change my evaluation, but it's
24. So he's, you know, it's a little easier. That's true. Be better at media when you're 24.
Well, and as some of those guys too, right. When you're 24, you've gone through a non-COVID season. So you've dealt with media sessions
exactly.
As a player where some of the freshmen have not, but yeah.
Yeah. But I guess the thing with him is the age thing doesn't scare me as much because most players are going to have the rookies, if they're good, 7 years, basically. You get the 4 years. Well, I guess it may be like more like eight, whatever the 4 years you have them plus a 4 year extension is like the likely. Yeah. So it's good. And they're really, really good. And then you're like, at risk of losing them anyways. And in that range, you're still getting his peak, right? You're still getting his prime, I guess. You're going to get, you know, on his new contract, he'll be between 27 and, you know, 32, let's say. So like, you're not missing out on that. It's not like, you know, if he does become a decent player, you're still getting that like peak range and you get control of that and stuff like that. Obviously, you're not going to get like a 20 year career out of him. Like you know, if you're, you could think for some players, right? You draft a guy you think could be in your team 15, 20 years. That's probably not Duarte, but I don't know if that age scares me as much. With Kispert, the thing I find interesting about him is that clearly he's got kind of a lower ceiling, let's say, but I think there's a lot of people, I don't think he's a really high floor, right? He's definitely going to be a sharp shooting three-point shooter who's going to be like in a JJ Redick type mold probably and could be somewhere between that and like, I guess, McDermott range.
I have two things to follow up on what you said about Duarte before we pivot to Kispert. One is Duarte's kind of the guy I was saying specifically earlier when I call out the like they're old so their ceiling is lower analysis. Like, no, that's not true. Like Duarte didn't really start playing basketball until he was like 15, I think, right? And then he went to JUCO and like clearly he's gotten way better since then. And you know, the biggest, maybe not the biggest, but one of the bigger things with age and how it affects potential is when you're 18, you're getting your skills developed by an NBA team earlier in your life, but at the same time, they're growing your body where that is not as possible when you're older, right? It's harder to tweak your body as much when you're already 24, but you know, so that is, it's a knock to be older for sure. But it's when you're a guy who like Duarte who started playing basketball later and has grown so much in college, like there's still a lot of room for growth to me. So I don't really buy the like lower ceiling analysis for him necessarily. I just don't think his skills are going to be super impactful on winning in the NBA, but all these NBA teams see it differently than me. Yeah. Kispert, I like quite a bit. I'm pretty surprised how many people dislike, I get why people dislike him from an analysis standpoint. I'm not going to lie, but I actually think he's a good player, right? He's a fantastic shooter. He's very capable off the ball. He actually has like the ability to, you know, this is the fear with some shooters you see in college when their three ball's taken away, they have to give it up. Kispert can shot fake, put it on the floor. He's good at getting to the basket every once in a while, right? Obvious downside of defense, but we talked about skilled players earlier. He has a very good skill. And I agree with you for him specifically because he's been playing for so long and his growth from junior to senior year at Gonzaga was, you know, he got better for sure, but not in like a meaningful defensive way or anything that you'd really want. But so his ceiling's probably a lower, but I think he's definitely good now. And I'm surprised how many people are so averse to him as a player because he's, again, a good shooter and scorer. Like that's his defense will probably be rough for a while, which could make him a neutral player and make him not appealing of a prospect. But I think his offense is good enough that it's worth it.
Yeah. Do you also notice in Jermichael's list that four of the five guys were like multi-year college players?
I did realize that.
Is that what you meant by interesting? Or is, I mean, am I?
No. I said interesting because I think Kispert's the highest ranked guy I have on this list. I do not think they're that good of players.
Oh, I got you. I mean, that's, well, some of that is the age thing too, right? I guess a little bit.
Sort of. I mean, from age who I think are good. So, kind of, I guess, but not really. Like, I have a sophomore above Kispert. I don't know. Third guy Jay listed is Davion. I've talked about him too much.
Yeah, you don't like him very much. We move on.
I think he's good. I have him one tier below the range the Pacers are in. He'll definitely be a good on-ball defender in the NBA. But we talked about this with Aaron sometimes. Like, let's say Chris Paul and Kyle Lowry and kind of McConnell and kind of Patrick Beverley. Like, short guards are not – they're just inherently hard to be a good defender, even if you try really hard and you're up in guys' faces. Like, we saw the limitations Corey Joseph and TJ McConnell had. And they're considered good defenders for their size in the NBA. So, you know, he could be a good defender and then it's fine. But I don't really buy Davion as like a high ceiling NBA player. He could be good, but he'll have to be a good shooter to me to be good.
Yeah. I mean, that's obviously at that height.
You like him more than I do.
Yeah. I don't know. I liked him in Baylor. The height always is like the scariest thing in the NBA. Like, it's just like, it's one thing you can't teach, right? If you're 6'7", you can kind of figure things out. But if you're 6 feet tall, sometimes you're just kind of screwed.
That's if Sharif Cooper was 4 inches taller, I'd have him probably top two or three.
I mean,
short, right? So he'll have extreme limitations, but he's an insane shot creator. But he's not on this list.
The height thing is just so scary. There's not a long list of 6 foot guys succeeding. I mean, Chris Paul is 6 feet. He's probably the most obviously most successful one, but like most of the time, the good point guards are 6'3", right? Look at like Drew Holiday, Steph Curry 6'3",
especially the good defensive ones.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I mean, like Westbrook 6'3". I mean, he's got a list of point guards. Like all the ones that have a good history of are all kind of in that range. I mean, some of them are a little bit bigger, but and the other name on this was Cam Thomas, who I don't really have a great feel for. I mean, you know, I think he's super young and can be good, but he's like kind of also. He has decent potential, right? It's just whether he can actually like be a point guard or is he more of a two guard?
He's definitely a two guard.
Okay.
He is.
Does he have the height to play two guard? I guess he does. He's 6'4".
He is hilarious to watch. Like that dude will shoot anything.
Right. Never passes.
His assists are hilarious. I mean, I think I saw that he is like the least passes per shot attempt in like 5 or 6 years as a good prospect. It's wild. I'll have to find the graphic for the Locked On Pacers Twitter feed tomorrow. But yeah, he shoots from everywhere. He can make shots from anywhere. Some tough shots, especially good at creating shots for himself. The thing about Cam Thomas that I struggle to evaluate myself, and this is where NBA teams have a huge advantage over me, is like he just flat out in college a lot, just like didn't care or try like on possessions, which is pretty funny. Like he had no interest in passing, no interest in defense a lot of the time. So is he actually bad at them? Probably, but I don't know. Maybe he put some effort into it in the NBA and looks like a better player. But yeah, he's a fantastic scorer. So I'm moving him down probably tonight. I think I was thinking about him today just from a principal standpoint, but he can flat out score the ball.
Yeah, I think that he'd be a really frustrating rookie to play with when you have a good team.
Very.
Right? I'm not sure Rick Carlisle is going to like that either. So that's why I guess they must really like him. I mean, Rose had some sources on this. They must like the way he worked out, but it just feels like kind of like a pretty like scary prospect you take and then the whole organization hates him and then it doesn't really work out because he just gets like shoved to the back of the bench, basically. They won't do anything else.
The last guy on Jay's reported list, Trey Murphy from Virginia. I caught a little bit of him like a week ago. An insanely good shooter, maybe the best shooter in this class. So that is obviously very good.
Or Kispert, you think? I guess maybe.
Kispert and him are both up there. So it's probably Kispert actually. But yeah, Trey Murphy hit 43% of 5 threes a game at Virginia last year, and shot 93% from the free throw line, which is generally an excellent sign of accurate shooting. That said, he grew a lot too. That was another big thing for him, is he grew like 5 inches when he started college to the end. That said, he gets pegged as a 3-and-D prospect a lot. I think he's half of that. I think he's definitely a good 3-point shooter. I do not think he is good on defense at all. He loses track of the ball so much off ball. It's kind of hysterical. So he's like, as a late first round target, I'd love him because the upside on the actual skill there, we talk about skills, is really high. But yeah, the defense is so like, Like, he makes Kispert look like an awesome defender.
Yeah. Like, at least with him, he has the size. And so, like,
definitely 6'9". Yeah.
Yeah. And we saw TJ Warren, right? TJ Warren hadn't been even his life for three seasons because basically he needs a pretty decent defender. I mean, right. The first season. So, like, defense, if you have the size, I think is teachable, or at least like competent defense. I mean, you're not going to be like, you know, Kawhi Leonard out here, but you could be, you know, enough of a defender that like you're not getting beat in every single play. But you also have to want it at the same time. Like, I mean, you saw Jeremy Lamb has the size to play defense, doesn't really want it sometimes, it feels like.
Yep. I agree with all that.
And the other name I want to throw out there, because it could be a falling name and he's been kind of up and down, but like we both agree if Kuminga falls to 13, you take him, no doubt, right?
Oh, unbelievable. Yes.
He won't. I don't think he will, but he's been the one who's been like, could he fall? There's always, you know, he'll probably go like to the Magic at 8 or 5.
I've always considered falling for Kuminga like 8 or 9.
There's going to be the odds are there'll be somebody from, let's say, like the consensus top 7 who will fall, right? It's just the way it usually works, but I mean, maybe not this year. Like, and he's probably the heavy favorite. Now, fall could be not past like 10, right? If Kuminga falls past 8 or 9, he might trade up for him pretty easily. So we'll see. But he's the one who could fall theoretically.
Yeah, I suppose that is true. Of the top 7 guys, he seems like the most likely to fall. I'm not sure he gets past 7, though. We'll see. I mean, and again, anything could happen. And as soon as one guy gets one spot farther than teams expect, the chaos could begin. You know, teams try to trade up and stuff. Yeah, Kuminga is a guy that if he falls, I think you have to kind of change your plans, book night as well. But yeah, we can talk about guys we like now, or do you want to do a break and then do guys we like specifically ourselves in trades? What do you want to do?
Yeah, let's take a break and we'll do guys we like, trade predictions, and some other stuff to end out the show. Because first, the Locked On Pacers podcast is also brought to you by BetOnline.ag. BetOnline.ag is the best and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. The baseball season is in full swing. You can check all the action on BetOnline.ag. The latest news, odds, info on all your sport needs, including MLB, NBA, NHL, NFL, and UFC MMA action. Before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline.ag on your left mobile device. Check out all the great sporting news, sign up bonuses, kind of information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. This is your chance to get in the game as teams prep for the playoff runs. At your website today or mobile device, sign up and get a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit with promo code Locked On. LOCKEDON. For a 50% welcome bonus, betonline.ag, your online sports book experts. All right, let's talk this out early. Do you think that Pacers make a trade on draft night with their pick or for a pick?
With the 13th pick
with the 13th pick or for another pick in front of them?
I don't know. I hate to be that guy, but I don't know.
All right, great, great, great podcast content.
I know.
Right there.
I get why they would. But I don't know. I think if they're going to trade, it would be back. And I think it's because a lot of the reporting is that Duarte is really popular and people are trying to get up for him. And in that Pacers range might have to be where you have to apparently get to get him. And maybe that's why they're selling so hard that they want him, right? Is that, you know, all these teams want to get him and they're trying to trade up for him so they can increase the haul they potentially get. But yeah, I think it's more likely. I think given the tiering of the players in this draft that they would trade back. So my gut says no, but I think it's very possible. We talked about how I think that given their youth pipeline situation, I would want to be picking as high as possible. But if they're going to pick a really old guy, then maybe you move back.
So my thought is if they can somehow get rid of Lamb's contract by trading back, whether even it's just for another player who is more valuable, it might be worth it on that scale. Like if you're not going,
I think Lamb's deal is not worth moving back to me at all.
You don't think so? No. So I mean, like, so we saw the Eric Gordon float. And I think Eric Gordon maybe isn't the perfect fit because he's a little too much money and is the picture a little too far back. But you can go from like 13, I would say like 17. Or 16 or something like that, and get rid of Lamb and get a player or whatever. I don't know. That might be worth it because I think then that means you're getting rid of Lamb and using that money to get somebody else. And there's like, you know, I mean, there's like a plus value there in some ways, right? Because you can then use a full MLE or whatever and resign both your guys. So I do think there is some value in that if you can like not go too far back. But that's about the only way I'd see them making a trade in terms of like going backwards. Forwards, I could see them doing, but it might involve, you know, one of the centers.
Forwards would require, they have to give up something of value, and it would have to require someone they like actually being there, which
I don't know. Will be hard. That good that's worth doing, unless they really love like Kuminga, I guess.
I personally would trade up for Moody, but
okay.
I don't know how, you know, that's a tough call on how much you give up there. I would think about trading up for Giddy, but probably not.
Yeah, I just don't. I just feel like you give a real asset to go up and don't get anything, like any player back in return, and that guy ends up being like just not that great. That's
oh, of course, now. Of course.
That's a
trading in any direction is super risky. I think it's more likely. If I had to rank it, I would say pick, trade down, trade up in that order.
I think trading back isn't as risky, especially because like odds are the guy you trade back for won't be that good anyways. Like he might be okay, but like he's not gonna, like, unless, you know, the worst case scenario obviously is Davion Mitchell, where the Nuggets traded back and then he went 13 and now he's, you know, one of the best guards in the East or the West. I mean, but like I do think most of the, I say Davion, I meant
Donovan.
Donovan. Wow. Well, I made that mistake on another podcast, but you'll never know. but yeah, that's what I would say for trades. Who are the player? I mean, obviously, apparently you really like Moody. Who else do you really like?
Love him.
Who else do you really like? Maybe gettable. Let's not, I mean, we all like Cade, but it's like
Moody's gettable, I think.
Name some guys who you like who are gettable, not just like,
oh,
Cade Cunningham.
Yeah, Moody is one of the, I mean, yeah. I just think Moody's incredible. I think he's got so many skills that can make him stand an NBA floor and be good on both ends. I have him very highly ranked, and you know, a lot of mocks have him now kind of in the 9 to 15 range. If he's there, that I think is the best, realistically possible pick for them at 13. If they move up, that changes things. But yeah, I think Moody is one. I love Josh Giddey. I have him 9th. That's, I guess, also possible, although a lot of report, like the betting lines on where these guys will go, betonline.ag has them, by the way. Giddey's has flown up to like 9.5.
It's incredible.
What?
Giddey's court vision is incredible.
Yeah, it's insane.
It's insane. I mean, for a guy that young. I mean, it's like, I know he also played in Australia, like Lonzo, and I heard somebody else said it somewhere else, but like, it just kind of, it's like a similar, like, can do other stuff well? We don't know, but he definitely could pass the fucking ball.
So if you want to think about guys who like might get picked right around the Pacers, just based on the betting over-unders, Duarte's is 14.5. Kispert's is 14. Davion's is 12.5. You know, those guys are like right in the range. Jalen Johnson from Duke is 15. I'm trying to find some other ones. Giddey's is 10 now. That's actually lower. It was 9.5 earlier. Moody's is 10.5 now. It seems like the Hornets are starting to potentially like him. So, that's the kind of guys who will be around their range, it sounds like. And I think Moody would be ideal from that group for sure.
Yeah. Do you like, I mean, we did this a little yesterday, but do you like Wagner for the Pacers? Wagner.
I like Wagner. I have him in the same tier from 10 to 18. He's in that tier for me. But I get the downsides of a guy who's like the dream role player, basically, is what you're getting with him.
Well, also, like, is he a center is the question.
He's not a center.
Okay.
You're the only person who thinks that he's a center.
Well, it's become a center because he's 6'11". I mean, usually by that height.
I'd actually rate him higher if he was a center, I think.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah, he's definitely skilled. So
you don't think a 6'11" guy will eventually be playing center in the NBA? Like, if he's just that tall?
I mean, yeah, because he's skilled and they can do small ball. So yeah. Maybe. I do like him a little bit, but I have him 18th, but that tier is so big that, I mean, that's fine. It's basically equal with so many of these guys.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, I really like some other guys like Jaden Springer, but you know, all his drafts and over under stuff is like early 20s. So I, you know, that probably isn't baked in reality at all. I love Sharif Cooper. I have him 6th. Again, also not baked in reality at all. But we'll have to see how these guys turn out. But I think of the realistic guys who I also would rate high, Moses Moody is near the top of that list for me, as well as Giddey and Booknight. I have in my top 10.
So do you want to give who you think they'll take first, or you want me to give it first?
Go ahead.
I think they probably take Cody Kispert.
Who?
Corey Kispert. Wow, it's Corey Kispert. The name, to be honest, I don't know how to know most of these names.
All over the place.
Today. I know these names, but honestly, I don't know. Yeah, they drafted and then move on. Corey Kispert.
Yeah, you know, that is the name that's sticking out in my head a little bit, but
it just feels like a Pacers pick.
Kispert and Davion stick out in my head as guys that seem like. Well, you have to think about what does Carlisle want? What fits what he wants to do, right? Ryan Carr talked about how Carlisle came into the draft meetings this week and talked to them about, you know, his thoughts on the young guys and stuff like that. And I think those guys kind of fit how he would want his youngsters to play. He doesn't have the longest leash with youngsters, by the way.
Yeah, so he doesn't really like young players, so why want somebody a little older?
I mean, obviously Luka's an exception who he played a lot, but like, yeah, he hasn't really been super pro young guy. Jalen Brunson is one he played a lot in Dallas. So
Richard Brunson went to four years at Nova, right?
Nova. Yeah, he was a longer term guy. Yeah, that's a good thought. So I think Kispert and Davion stand out to me as some likely picks, but anyone in that 11 to 17 range or 18 range that you've heard on a mock draft, if they picked
them. So you're not giving a name at all. You're just going to just beat around.
Said two names.
No, give me a name who you think they'll take. That way they can hold it against you. And like, you know, with
pie. Oh, I don't, that's dumb.
In 24 hours.
Okay. If you want to hold a name against me, I'll just say Davion, I guess.
Okay. You're going to love that. They take Davion Mitchell.
No comment. You know, it doesn't matter what I think. Like, they have more info than me. I just rank guys because I want to know how good I think they are. But yeah, you know, I mean, if I think they pick a guy who's way worse than someone else, I mean, I'm going to be critical using my own opinions, obviously. But we'll see what happens. I mean, there's just such a glut of guys who are in that mid-tier that they can do so. And like, it sounds dumb. I wrote this in my article today. It sounds dumb to say like they could do anything. They could trade up, trade down, or stay. Because like, duh, like every team except for the first and last pick can move up or down. But like, there are actually legit, like, this makes so much sense for them, reasons to do both directions, not just like they could do it, if that makes sense, why that distinction is there. So, I mean, very little would actually surprise me, but I am kind of bracing for a somewhat chaotic draft in general.
Yeah. So I was going to ask the pitch of the show, any wild predictions? I mean, whether it's Pacers or anybody
Pacers
else.
Or not.
Yeah. Ooh. Just give me a wild prediction. Anything crazy going to happen?
Yeah. Know what? Yes. I think the Thunder are going to be wild tomorrow or tonight. I think the Thunder are going to be wild.
So what do they have?
So many high picks this year. They have so many good picks this year and so many picks in the future. And I mean, they've just been in the rumors throwing these trade offers around. I don't know if they're real or not, but I think the Thunder are going to do or could do something wild.
So in this draft, what do they have? They have, is it 6, 16, and 18 in the draft?
They have 6, 16, 18, 34, and 36. So they have 6 or 5 picks in the top 30.
And you just can't have that many young players in your roster, like that many, like from one draft. You just won't be able to fit them
if
all.
You just threw a dart at a dartboard that had 36 slots, there's basically a 1 in 7 chance you hit a Thunder pick. Like, that's crazy. That's
insane. The problem is this might be a 4-player draft. They don't have a top 4 pick.
Correct. They got they also have 55, but I mean, that player's not making their roster next year. No. Given how many other picks they have. But you know, because they also have so many future picks, and you can only have 15, whatever, 17 if you count 2 A's guys in your team, like, they are ripe to do something. I think the Warriors could also do something. So we'll see. And maybe there's a star trade tomorrow night. We'll see. I don't know. But I think those are the teams that stand out to me. But I mean, the other thing is between this Duarte noise and the Knicks and the Rockets and the Thunder all having 2 picks from 16 to 24, all 3 of those teams have 2 picks, right? There could be a ton of movement, like, right outside of 10 before 25. We kind of talked about that yesterday. So just be a lot of like subtlety movement kind of stuff.
Here's my wild prediction, and mainly just because maybe I don't know why. And the Pacers could make a trade with that 13th pick. And I know they're going to take Kispert, they keep the pick, but they could take Duarte and then make a move with him later in the draft, similar to what was it, Mikal Bridges? Michael Bridges?
Yeah, that's possible.
I get something like that where they take him just because they know teams want him and still end up with Kispert later in the draft because he falls or whatever and get something else and maybe get off Jeremy Lamb finally.
Does Chris Duarte's mom work for the Pacers? Then it could be the perfect Mikal Bridges story. You remember that?
Yes, Mikal's I do.
Mom,
they took
worked
him
for the Sixers. That was crazy.
Well, to me, that's a nightmare scenario for our podcast because we get drafted, we do a podcast, and they trade the pick later in the draft, and we're like, shit.
Yeah, we won't react immediately because Rick Carlisle's doing media after the pick, but I mean,
it happened pretty late. It was like, you know, one of those people were like, wait, what just happened there? Everybody's really surprised by it, but it worked out like best for them.
Yeah, so. Sorry to cut our discussions off. Do you have any other draft stuff to talk about from a Pacers perspective? Oh yeah. Can I do one more thing actually?
Yeah.
That no one cares about.
Oh,
your fave. The second rounders. They also pick 54th and 60th, 2 of the last 7 picks. Can I name 3 names I like there? Do you have anybody you even care about?
No, not even a clue. I don't even try.
Austin Reeves from Oklahoma. He can really score. He had a nice workout with the Pacers. His grandma lives in Kokomo. He's one guy I like in the second round. Jeremiah Robinson Earl from Villanova is another guy I like in the second round. Pretty good defender. And Joe Weiskamp from Iowa. He's an insanely good shooter. Dropped out of the NBA combine probably because he got a draft promise. But there's a chance he is also an excellent shooter who's available in the second round. So those are 3 guys I like in the second round. Remember, the Pacers don't have like a ton of open roster spots, and they probably want to sign a vet or two. So it's pretty likely that there's a they have a trade with one of their last two picks, or they pick a Euro guy who's not coming over this year.
So there was one a guy in Europe I was just looking at, because I thought where he played was kind of funny. He's 55 on the draft board I'm looking at. Philip Petrusev playing at
Petrusev, he's good.
Yeah, playing at Mega Soccer Bet.
Mega BMAX, yeah, that's where Goga played.
I know, it's just a funny team name.
Yeah, he's actually okay. I was when I was watching Rocco Percation, who ended up dropping out of this draft, I watched him against Flip, and they were both pretty good. Yeah, that's a possibility. But I think he wants to come over because he stayed in the draft, so we'll see. And the other thing is, like, they just worked out Alex Antetokounmpo. I was like, maybe they could draft and stash him, but he's now playing Summer League for the Kings. So it seems weird that he's already committed to that, apparently. But that was reported.
You're in the draft?
Huh?
You commit to another team for Summer League if you're in the draft?
Yeah, that was surprising to me because he's actually not listed in the player pool for the draft. Isn't that weird?
Maybe he's not.
Stuff that no one really cares about except for reporter types. But like, there's a player pool of like eligible drafted players. Alex Antetokounmpo is not in it, and the Pacers worked him out. So maybe they're just. I mean, you can work out anybody, even guys who aren't in it. But I thought that, you know, given his name, that'd be a guy you work out because he's in it. But apparently, yeah, the report. I think it was Jason Jones. He's playing summer league for the Kings, so he's not worth picking either.
Yeah. All right. Well, interesting.
But yeah, the second rounders are important, and maybe they consolidate them and trade up or something. I just wanted to we can't go the whole show just talking about the 13th pick. There is
we probably could have. I don't know. Probably could have. So for our schedule this week, we'll have one more show the rest of the week. The rest one more week. One more show this week. After we'll do a draft show after they make the pick. Whatever they do, we'll probably do it later in the draft night. So I'll post like late Thursday evening is listening to this podcast, hopefully. Before this one, and then we will be back on Monday with a fringy like.
I disagree.
Primer.
I haven't run this by you yet, Adam? But actually, I think we're gonna post our free agency preview like 6 p.m. Sunday.
Okay.
So it's a little more topical and long lasting because that stuff will get crazy so fast.
Okay, sure. It counts as our Monday show, but it'll be up Sunday evening or Sunday, and then we will have obviously free agency stuff all next week. So we'll just probably be doing shows as news breaks every so often because we'll probably get some initial stuff and some later stuff, and so we'll just kind of, you know, keep us in your mind as your Pacer news and look to see if the pockets will probably have stuff pretty quickly is our plan for that. Anything else, Tony?
No, I think a lot of Pacers are currently working out together out in California. TJ Warren posted a video on his Instagram story. Scott Agnes reported on it. Four starters are there. Sabonis is in Lithuania, so he can't be there. But yeah, Brogdon's there. Warren is there. Miles Turner is there. Caris LeVert's there. Keelan Martin, Goga, Amita Brima, they're all there. So Pacers getting the work in, and it's draft time. It's all happening.
Uh-oh, is Sabonis being traded? Wait, just kidding. As always, you can follow this podcast at Locked On Pacers on Twitter. Me at FreeManAdam5, Tony at Teased NBA. That is all for his Locked On Pacers podcast. We'll see you guys again.